to Hammered in Helios, a 5th edition spirited Dungeons & Dragons homebrew campaign. During each session, our cast not only tries to survive the cruel Dungeon Master's plans, but also reviews a delicious bottle of liquor. Remember, whether you're adventuring through a fantasy world or just listening to ours, please drink responsibly.
Hey everyone, this is Brando, and I play Croft, a simple tailor and part-time assassin. And today we are viewing a rum called Papa's Pilar Spanish Sherry Casks. Now, this thing is super interesting. Got an interesting backstory to it. It's named after Ernest Hemingway's famous boat. So the Papa in Papa's Pilar is referring to Hemingway. And the Pilar is the name of his boat. This was a hand-carved wooden boat with powerful engines on it and extra-large fuel so that he could be out. He could travel, be out at the sea, just go and do adventuring and all of the Hemingway things that Hemingway would do. So that's what it was named after. What's interesting – oh, also, it shares a name with the heroine in his novel From For Whom the Bell Tolls. So Pilar, that's where that comes from. So
are you telling me he named his boat after a fictional heroine?
I don't know which one came first.
Wait, do you say when you said heroine, do you mean
the actual drug?
The drug, not the female?
No. There's not a female hero. It's the actual drug called Pilar. It was on the streets back in the early 1900s. But what's interesting is the rum itself is actually inspired by Hemingway's travels. So what they do is they source local rums from places where Hemingway had traveled to. So they're sourcing from places like Panama, Barbados, Dominican Republic, and they get the special mixture of what they want, and they have a special blending process to achieve whatever taste profile they're going for. This particular one, the Spanish sherry casks, was aged, obviously, in Spanish sherry casks. And about the taste profile, you guys will probably notice it's very sophisticated. You get a little bit of brown sugar, some oak, some caramel, some toffee, some maple, and kind of underlying all of it is just a little bit of nuttiness there. So overall, this thing is, it's a slightly sweet. It's very complex. And it's pretty smooth too. So I'm a fan. I've been sipping and sassing, and I'm liking it. So I'm gonna give this bad boy I'm gonna go 18.
This is Garrett Carty, and I play Ignath Redjaw, your orc monster slayer ranger, and I'm level 8. This is really like candy in a glass. Like, it smells like candy. It is a little bit hotter, but something I really like is I feel like as it sits on the tongue, you keep on getting those same notes like back again. So it almost is like you just sucked on a hard candy. Yeah. I'm going to give this like a 17.
Ooh. All right. I'm Dean Rains. I play Orin Can Fix It, your gnome battlesmith artificer with the robotic dog corgi. And I just tried this, and at first I hated it. The very first touch to my mouth was awful. I don't think that's any kind of surprise here. But I will say, after Brandon started doing all of his descriptions and saying the things like brown sugar and maple and whatnot, I took another sip and I looked for those. And I'm embarrassed to say I feel like I actually kind of noticed some of the things.
All right.
Dang.
So I do want to clarify something, though. Please, anyone jump in here. We use the phrase hot a lot with this, and I've even said it. I don't know what hot actually means when you all refer to this.
It's like the burn, the dryness in your back of your throat and your esophagus.
Smooth would be something that doesn't burn at all, and then hot would be something that...
Okay, so you can't be hot and smooth. I am hot and smooth in real life.
You just said you can't be.
Well, no. I'm saying liquor. Whiskey.
Which one is it? Which one is it, Dean?
Well, whiskey can't be hot and smooth, right?
This is rum.
Well, yeah. What's the difference?
I actually don't know. I don't think there is a difference.
Mike's head just exploded a little bit.
Rum is actually the Spanish word for whiskey.
Ah, okay. Yeah. See. Thank you.
If you make it in Panama, it's called a rum.
But with all of that said, all jokes aside, I don't hate this as much as the first drink I really thought I would. I'm going to take one more here. Hold on. Damn, that's actually really good. I'm really surprised that I'm about to do this, but I'm going to go like 16.
Oh!
Really surprised.
I'm Mike Williams. I play a Nessun Baryothian, a wood elf, evocation wizard, level 20.
No, that's not true.
Prove it.
Oh, I thought we were just saying whatever.
You just say what you want.
Yeah. Doesn't mean it's true, though.
Well.
Yeah. still level 9.
That's kind of the best level comeback. Nine, when think... someone says, yeah, but it's not true, you say, well, I don't know. Is it though? Are you sure about that? Are you sure about that?
I mean, in my mind, I'm level
10. Yeah. We should leave the level up to our listeners, you know, like whatever they imagine our level is.
If you go to twitter.com, I've got a poll up right now that says, what level should I be?
It's on the homepage of twitter.com.
So you all are now level 1. I read the poll and 1,000% of our listeners believe that you guys are level 1.
That was fast, listeners.
Yeah, really fast. Anyways, Mike.
So, I mean, I think initial to the nose, it's super sweet. And then to the taste, it's like everyone described. It's definitely a good maple, that spice that you would expect from rum. It's pretty sweet. But I think the combination of the sweet and a little, it is hot. It's not, I don't think it's like, I wouldn't call it smooth per se. It's definitely lingering kind of warm in my throat and chest. But it is super good. It is very, very, very solid. I'm going to go 17.
Ooh.
17. All right.
All right.
New high score. New high score.
Come on, Owen. Bring it home, baby. Bring it home.
All right. My name's Owen Landsberg. Oh, no. We haven't.
My name is Owen Landsberg. I'm here to say I dungeon master like every day. One, two. I'm also white. I have no rhythm. And that's all right.
Gosh darn it.
You can call us for your corporate HR events. We'll do your media, all of your training for you.
You can do cello. The most basic.
Anyways, I can't. I just can't with you guys sometimes. It's so good. This is why I love just hanging out with you guys because of this bullshit. It's so good. All right. And I'm Owen Landsberg, your evil, cruel, malicious, but lovingly tender dungeon master. I really like this rum. I really enjoyed the fact that you brought another rum. We've been very heavy on the whiskey in all sense of the category of whiskey since the beginning of this podcast. It's nice to diversify a little bit. Papa's Pilar has been something I've drank for a long time, but I've never actually had this version of it, and I really like it.
Ooh.
I'm not going to lie. I really like this. The maple, you get a little bit of that fruitiness from the sherry casks. I get like that walnut on there as well, and it creates a beautiful experience. I like that there's a little bit of heat still to it, where it's not just straight smooth rum flavors.
Yeah, and it doesn't deter you, and I think it's kind of a good counter to the sweet too.
100%. It does create a nice dichotomy in the flavor. What is the proof on this one?
This one is 86 proof.
86 proof, so 43%, and I do believe this one's aged for 24 years.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the age. Yeah, I didn't find that piece of information, but yeah.
It's 24 years.
Well, so it says the number 24 on it real big.
Yeah.
Solera profile.
Yeah, so Solera is interesting. So what basically, Solera is very prominent in wine and sherry, and it's basically what they do is like condensing it down. So what they do is they take low-aged rums that are of this profile, and they put it into casks with older-age rum and let it sit there and kind of mature.
Yeah.
With each other, and then they take that and then put it into an older cask with older rum. And they do that a couple of times. I don't know how many times Pappas Pilar does it. It's usually five times. And that fifth time you let it sit there and kind of maturate with itself and it all mixes. And that's what the Solera method is. Like I said, it's very prominent in wine and sherry, but Pappas Pilar, there's a couple other rums that do it. And there's actually a couple of whiskeys that do that as well. So it's not technically 24 years because not all the whiskey – or sorry, all the rum in it is not 24 years old, but the it's Solera'd to 24 years.
Yeah.
But I'm
also, thinking, there's a big old rooster on it too. I don't know if that means anything.
It does.
You want to expand on that, Dean?
No, it just does. It just does.
What does it mean?
It's a chicken.
It's a chicken. Okay, thank you. Anyways, I really like this, like I said – I don't like it as much as I like the Diplomatica Reserva we had.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Some gross shit like chartreuse right now, Owen.
Oh, are you going off of past numbers?
I was looking what
you gotta
my.
You got to go wrong.
I was looking at what my. I gave the Diplomatica Reserva because I would prefer the Diplomatica over this, to be honest. But I gave the Diplomatica 16, so I'm going to give this one 15.
All right.
One less. Because I do like the Diplomatica better. Scores combined, the total is 83. Which makes it the second highest rated. Before we begin this week's adventure, I need to give a special shout out to BattleBards.com. BattleBards specializes in creating the coolest and best sound effects and ambient music on the market for your tabletop experience. They have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of files ready to go at your fingertips for you to use as either a dungeon master or even as a player. And they have so graciously donated some of their library to Hammered in Helios. So from now on, whenever you hear a Nessun cast a spell, or Ignath shoot his bow, or any of the other cool sound effects you'll be hearing, you'll know it's from BattleBards.com.
Last time on Hammered in Helios, from the personal journal of Moore's Croft. We scoped out the docks and saw they were swarming with soldiers, so we decided to meet the ship out on the river before it arrived and steal the cargo there. Oren suggested we forego the docks and meet the ship out on the water before it arrives. I'm so proud of how devious he is becoming, no doubt a side effect of his time spent in my own cunning shadow. We found the vessel to be full of a great number of goblins. Of course, I effortlessly snuck on board and made it below to our desired cargo. And, of course, the others got themselves into trouble on the main deck. And in my attempt to save Ignath's life, I received a bit of an injury. Their solution was to throw ourselves and the cargo overboard. Did that accurately sum up last session?
Yeah, I think so. That's decent enough. I mean, you downplay what really happened to yourself because you got really like fucked. That.
Croft went to go save me.
Yeah.
I was fine. And then somebody had to carry Croft off the ship.
The guttural screams of goblins come rushing towards you all. They stand on the top deck of the Death of Gold, firing arrows at you all. Luckily, the arrows don't penetrate the water of the River of Hevelin. You guys are only a couple feet underwater as these arrows are just pelting all around you, but like I said, like they're only stopping, you know, maybe a couple inches after they hit the water. You see Oren swimming down towards the crate of the new and improved collars that House Tain ordered. What are you all going to do?
Is the ship still moving forward?
No, because you guys... You disabled it. You burned the sail. Or you cut the sails off. A Nessun casted fireball or a lightning bolt or something and killed like half of the footshul.
The minor elementals.
Mephits. Steam Mephits. Yeah.
Steamies.
Yeah. And then
in retrospect, maybe disabling the ship was a fucking awful idea.
Well, we can just like walk away casually in the bottom of the river, right?
Yeah, because you guys all have water walking and water breathing right now.
Is it still active, I guess?
Yeah.
Well, you have the power to cancel it, though, don't you? Is it a it's a concentration?
And Nessun cancels it.
The power is yours.
Neither one is concentration.
Okay.
You are able to start to swim down towards the crate. The natural current of the river, though, is making it quite hard for you guys to swim directly down. The crate is sinking at an alarming rate, but the two of you are getting pushed by the current away from it. So with a 13, you only effectively make it like 5 feet down while the crate has sunk to another 20 feet.
Oh, wow. I guess we just want to keep going. I mean, we got to secure the crate and get it. So the ship is behind us closer to the city, I guess?
Yes, closer to the city. So as you guys are getting pushed away from the city out into the ocean.
Okay. So then I would imagine we'd want to take the crate with the current and say, let's at least take it downstream a little bit before we can pull it out. So I just would want to keep that effort.
With the water breathing ability, I will say if you guys want to just speed this along and bypass it because there's not going to be any harm because you guys don't need to make checks for holding your breath or drowning. The ship is, because you guys disabled the sails, you cut the sails off, you killed majority of the rowers. The archers of the Death of Gold ship are attempting to row, but they're not really good at it. So eventually the ship is just now getting pushed out to sea as well because the current is taking it. You guys with water breathing, you watch the Death of Gold ship over a few minutes eventually just bypass you guys and then go back out into the Sea of Gods. And that's what the ocean is that is around Cork. It's a Sea of Gods. You guys take your time. You swim down. You fight the current as much as possible. And you, with Corgi, get down to the bottom of the Hevelin River. The Hevelin River is very, very deep. So you are seeing like large, like, bass and other pike and other large freshwater fish.
Like scary snapping turtles too?
No snapping turtles.
Oh, good. Because yeah, those are scary.
They are. They're terrifying. So you see all those creatures. There's still a lot of kelp and whatnot that is around, but you are able to chase after the crate and all of you have dark vision, so you don't have to worry about that as well. You grab the crate. The four of you latch it on to Corgi. And you guys, because you can't swim with it, basically take another couple hours and drag it across the bottom of the Hevelin River and then up onto the coast. And then you guys are now roughly 45 minutes outside Cork on the coast of the Hevelin River. Everyone give me a constitution saving throw.
It's a 9.
Constitution. I got a 16.
9, 16.
15.
15.
4.
If you got 11 or higher, you're fine. So 10 or lower, you fail.
Where does a 4 fall into that?
Below 10. So you failed. Sorry, Dean. The ones that failed, you take a point of exhaustion as you guys from swimming from the against the current, then dragging the crate with Corgi up and across and like pushing through all the kelp, you know, pushing rocks and everything around, you guys get a level of exhaustion. You guys look out and you can see the Death of Gold basically stranded in the Sea of Gods. And it is just waiting there. The currents are still taking it out. It is like a speck in the distance for you all. It's roughly now, we'll say like 3 a.m. after all this of trying to get it out and above. So you guys are on the coast of the Hevelin River. What would you like to do?
Well, it would seem we would have to sneak this back into Cork somehow.
Well, perhaps we go into Cork and find Scratch and bring Scratch to the shipment. Maybe a little less dangerous.
Regardless, we should move inland, away from the banks. At this point, if they have not already started headed this way on a search party for the Death of Gold, they will be soon.
I want to do like a perception check just to see if I can find of any like shelter or something. Like maybe we could like kind of set up a little camp. Like if we're going to bring Scratch out here, you know what I mean? Like maybe some little cave or something that we can use as like a temporary shelter.
Okay.
You know? So
everyone can do that.
That would be a nat 20.
Nat 20? Holy shit. Never mind. So you guys aren't far from the actual opening of the river, the Heveland River, to the Sea of Gods. You notice as about, you know, maybe 100 feet away from you guys towards the opening to the Sea of Gods, that there is like a little rock formation, and your best guess would be there's probably like a little cave somewhere that you could camp out for the night and rest your wounds.
Over here seems to be a shelter we could use temporarily. Perhaps we should take the crate over there and, as Inessen says, bring Scratch to it and let them deal with it after that.
Everyone else, please give me a perception check as well.
14.
12.
17.
17. Okay. Croft, you're fine with your nat 20. All four of you, as he said this, turn and look towards Cork as well. And you see about 30 torches walking towards you guys. They're pretty far off, but it is the dead of night. And they're all around Cork. There's no forest or anything. It's like very plains area. So you can see pretty far. And you can see that there is about 30 torches coming towards you all. You can't really hear them or anything like that, but you do notice there are torches.
Ignath, if we were to hide in a cave over there or a stone outcropping over there, would you be able to put some sort of camouflage around us?
I am quite tired, but I could try to fashion something up.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you guys travel the 100 feet. Corgi is easily able. I'm sure, Orin, by this time you've put the crate on top of Corgi, tied it down. Corgi is now 4 inches off the ground, running towards the cave with you all. You get into it, and the cave is only about like 15, 20 feet deep. It looks to be natural. It is just like this. It looks like maybe from the years of corrosion when the river was higher up, that this was something that like ate away at the stone. And it doesn't look like there's any animals or anything like that that call this place home. There's no like bones or scratches or scat around. All right. So you guys are in this cave. What would you all like to do?
Perhaps we should just rest here through the night, let this mob pass by, and in the morning go and get Scratch.
So you all fall asleep, and next thing you know is you are walking through a forest. So once again, you all don't see yourselves as your actual characters. You now see yourselves as the old knights of Yarantar. Let's go around and everybody introduce yourselves.
This is Mike Williams. I am now your friendly celestial warlock, Alden Brownbottom.
I'm Brando, and I'm playing Losev Igovich, a paladin ice dwarf.
I'm Garrett, and I'm playing
Glench.
Wait, is he an orc?
A drunken master, Luxodon.
Luxodon. Nice.
There we go.
I'm Dean Rains, and I'm playing Keely Colo, your Triton Bard, voice undecided.
Okay, then. As you all are now the old knights of Yarantar, you know that you have been sent on a mission from Yarantar herself, taking you away from the jagged woods on Paleos. Now, in the woods that surround Bolan Swania, you know that your mission is to find a house that is in the woods from House Sable. And there's been some reported mischievous things that have been happening at this house, and people are looking for help. There's rumors that a magical item has been found that could help against the fight of Amrius. So Yarantar has sent the four of you to figure out exactly what is going on. The Volan Swanian woods have a weird thing about them, both the woods and the city of Volan Swania itself. The sun is almost always at dusk,
Cool.
It is, the sun is never up. The moon does come up, though. So the sun, when it rises, it stays at dusk. And when it sets at the end of the night, it comes from dusk straight down. And then the moon comes up. No one can explain it. No one knows why. But that is a part of the lore of Volensuania.
So, Owen, let me ask this. Do we have any vestiges of our consciousness, our characters? Or are we like, this is a full-on flashback, we are these
This
people?
Is a full-on flashback. So, yeah, Brando, you are correct. So you all know, like, so Brando, you know that you are Croft now inside Losef's body. And Anesin, you are in Alden's body and aware of that. So you guys are all aware of what is going on and are in control. So you can see each other, but you don't see each other as the other characters. You see them as who the old Knights of Yarntar are.
Has the mob passed us? Have they not found us in the cave? What is my voice? What is this? Where? We are not on the beach. And I think Croft, like, recognizes this vision, because we've had a vision like this before.
A few of them, yeah.
And I recognize that we are in this vision.
You have the memories, like, very, not like the full memories of the bodies that you are now inhabiting, but that short term, like, short memory of, like, you know why you guys are here in the Volensuanian woods on Dasaki. We are incorporating a new element for just this part of the podcast and for any other podcast. So there's a great tabletop game that is called Dread. If you haven't played it, please look it up. It's absolutely fun. It is a 100% horror game tabletop, and I believe that you can get the rules for it free online. If not, please find the website and pay for it and support them. But Dread is not actually ruled by dice. It is ruled by a Jenga tower, and that's what we're going to be doing here. So you guys will be still using your d20s, but we're going to be incorporating these Jenga towers. So every single player in front of them has their own Jenga tower, and each Jenga tower represents your guys's sanity. If your tower tumbles and falls, your character, as in the old Knights of Yarntar, goes insane and flees from the scene. Also, there will be bad things that happen to your actual character in current Helios.
Oh, no!
So make sure that you do not do this. If for any reason your tower tumbles, for instance, if your mic hits it, if you hit it over, or anything like that, someone hits the table and knocks it over, that 100% counts. Unless I accidentally do it, because it's not fair for me as a DM to do that. What will be happening is anytime you roll a d20, you have to pull a block for every single time you roll a d20. You have to pull a block and then put it on top of the Jenga towers. Regular rules apply. You can't pull from the top three, and you can always pull from the middle if you really want to, or live life on the edge and pull from the sides. If at any time you roll a nat 1... instead of pulling one block, you will pull four blocks.
Four?
Four blocks on a nat one.
Jeez, man.
If a creature ever hits you, you will pull a block. If the creature crits you, you will pull four blocks.
I'm coughing. Ichnath wakes up.
Is everybody else's vision blurry and spinning as well?
Ignath, I believe we are in a vision. We are in a Knights of Yarntar vision again, once again. It is me, Croft.
Yes, I recognize you and our other compatriots.
I remember we have a mission. We must find the object.
You all look around, and in this forest, the trees are very dense, but most of the trees don't have much leaves on them. They're gnarled branches, and the trees almost look petrified in a way, like they have been around for hundreds of thousands of years. The gnarled branches twist among themselves from tree to tree, almost creating a canopy that blocks what little remaining sunlight is left as it is dusk. In the background, you hear ravens crowing and owls hooting. You can hear snakes hissing. And the smell is very stale. Like, doesn't smell like it's rotting or anything like that, but has a very like stale air. Like the air doesn't move here and it's just collecting dust and mold.
It's like the movie Sleepy Hollow, right?
100% is. Yeah. It looks like the forest of Sleepy Hollow.
Hell yeah, man.
I will roll a survival check. That is a 13.
13. Okay. Pull a Jenga.
Oh. No, not
that. Knocking over on one.
Oh.
He's gone for a middle piece about halfway down the tower.
At a 13, you know that the House Sable is still somewhere in the Volanswanian woods. Clench. You feel as if the forest around you is playing tricks on you. You know that by now you guys should have come across House Sable, but for some reason you haven't been able to find it.
Seems that there's definitely something that's hiding this from us. Maybe the woods. Everybody else's woods are spinning, correct? This is definitely the woods that are doing this.
Clinch, if I were to guess, I would say that the spinning woods has something to do with that bottle lying next to you.
Oh no, that was there when I got here.
Well, it was, and it was there when you left it there.
I have some memory of you drinking a lot.
Let me know. Clench is not a litterer. He picks up that bottle, puts it back in his pack.
I respect that.
Pack it in, pack it out.
Clench always be on that good shine.
Oh, my God.
Alden was drinking some as well last night. That's
of
right.
Of course. It's like water.
Perhaps we should just continue down the path that is set before us and see what else we come across.
What kind of materials, supplies did we perhaps bring with us?
I wonder if we can keep
and I would like to dig through my own bags. So I don't seem to have any kind of inventory.
Do you
second
not?
Page.
Second page at the bottom.
Yeah, you do, my dude.
Did you guys just have anything printed on it?
Oh.
Yeah, I got
whoa!
Tenders.
I'm really fucked up your character.
Oh, yeah,
dude. Oh, yeah. All right, so I'm naked.
And afraid. And
I have nothing.
I got a giant bag of gold bars.
Can't take it with you, people.
You said it was very foggy where we're at?
It's very foggy. Ooh, there's a level of fog that is on the ground that rolls across the ground. It isn't like super dense fog, so you can still see the ground in front of you, but it is a little hazy. As well, everywhere you look, it is still hazy. Like I said, the trees look like they're almost braiding with one another to make the path outside of this... So to make it where if you guys were to leave the path, the trees themselves are literally blocking you from going anywhere else besides this designated path with inside the woods of Volanswanya.
Wait, that's the draw distance. Isn't that what that's called?
Yeah, draw distance. Yeah.
We got our visuals down low in a low setting. Yeah.
After a few hours, the sun has finally set with inside the Volanswanian woods. As the moon rises, you hear a loud wolf's howl. You continue on down the path, and in front of you, you see a single two-story house.
Cottage.
Not necessarily a cottage. It's a little bit bigger than a cottage.
Yeah, more of a spacious ranch.
Ooh. Yeah, spacious Ooh. Ranch, something like that. It is not well taken care of. There are lights on, there are torches on that are illuminating the area around it, and you can see from windows inside that there are torches on inside. But definitely this house has seen better days. There's spider webs everywhere. You can see that some of the wood looks to be rotting a little bit. You can see on one of the sides, there's like a little pen for animals, but there's no animals inside. at all. There's no grass or anything that is in this little clearing. It is just dirt and mud as the full moon rises up and above this house. You look at the front door of this house and you see scratched into the wood, not even like it's a sign, but straight into the wood above the door, it says Sable, S-A-B-L-E. What would you all like to do?
Told you we'd find it.
We did find it. It's right here.
I would like to approach the large, sprawling ranch-style home.
Losef, you said you walked to the front door.
I do.
What about you, Clench? What about you, Kilikolo? What about you, Alden? It's going to be weird calling you guys these names for the rest of the podcast. Or the rest of this session. Do you follow Losef?
Yeah, I don't see why we wouldn't.
All right.
We're not, because we're plat.
I have my Warhammer out.
Are they expecting us? Or are we just go? We were just told to go to House Sable.
To go to House Sable. As you go to knock on the door, give me a wisdom saving throw and pull me a block. Also, I forgot to say, at any time I make you pull a block for a d20 roll, you can pull a second block to give yourself advantage.
19.
All right, pull a block for me. Alden, as you go to knock on the door, and because you are a halfling, you are very short, your hand is near the doorknob and the keyhole, and the keyhole opens up and attempts to swallow your fist. But then once it misses, you notice that that is not something that didn't really happen. It was almost like it was just in your mind, as the rest of the three of you notice nothing happen.
Y'all see that?
I did not see anything. What is it that you think you saw?
That doorknob looked like it tried to attack my hand.
I think I saw that, definitely.
I guess they did enjoy that moonshine last night.
Wait, what was eating your hand?
The door.
The door eating your hand.
It was trying to.
I see no door eating hands.
As your hand is about to make contact with the door slowly opens up before your hand actually makes contact with it. And standing in front of you four is a young girl in a red dress with long black hair and black slippers on. She is very pale in her skin. Her eyes are almost completely black, but as you kind of zone in on her eyes, you can see they're just very dark brown. She smiles at you all and says,
"What are y'all doing here?"
"Hi, honey. We're here because Yarntar sent us. And is your mom?"
"What's Yarntar?"
"It's not important. Is your mama home?"
"No, it's just me."
"Well, can we come in?"
"Of course. Please come in. My name is Reagan."
"Hi, Reagan."
"And who are you all?"
"We are the Knights of Yarntar."
"Who's Yarntar?"
She's kind of a big deal in a big city, not out here in wood."
"Of course. Please come in."
"Hey, so I have divine sense."
"Okay.
That's not a spell, is it? Does that count as like..."
"No, that is not a spell. That is an ability that you have."
"Okay, I would like to cast it or do it. As an action, I sense celestials, fiends, undead, consecrated, desecrated within 60 feet.
Losef, you open up your innate sense of the beyond, if you will. Things that aren't natural in the world of Helios. And you can tell every single inch of not just the woods, the ground you stand on, but also this house. All of it is desecrated, and you feel tons of undead surrounding you."
"Do I have any sense specifically about Reagan?"
As you turn to look at Reagan, the feeling of foreboding and dread overtakes you. Give me a wisdom saving throw and pull a dive from, or pull a block from your tower, please.
Nat 20.
Oh shit. Okay. You don't have to pull a block.
Oh, I put my hand on, I reach my hand out and put it on Alden's chest to prevent him from walking in. And I swing my warhammer down. Is it a warhammer?
It is a warhammer.
You shall not pass.
Just up wide arc over my head and bring it straight down to like bonk right on the top of Reagan's head.
Okay, but you want to let me finish the sentence before you do an action?
Well, I mean, sure. I didn't know there was more.
Yeah. Yeah, so as you look down as straight at Reagan, there is a dark aura that protects her from your divine sense. She looks almost non-existent to your divine sense.
Yeah, I still want to hit her with my hammer. I want to just bring it on down.
You just want to bring it on down?
Yeah.
All right, that's an attack roll. Give me a Jenga pull.
Oh, wait, you got to pull Jenga over that?
Every single time you roll a D20.
All right, well, I'm going to roll first.
You guys want to see me do nothing for an entire...
So, plus 5 is 11. So, and I'll pull a dang old Jenga.
Losef, you attempt to bring your hammer straight down on top of Reagan, and as your hammer looks like it's about to hit her in the head, it literally stops on her flesh, on her skull. There's no vibration, there is no hit. It is like an inanimate object just stops right on her head and nothing happens. She looks up at you and goes,
"What do you think you're doing?"
"We should not enter this dark place full of evil."
"This place isn't dark. It's well lit with many torches."
I step back to the back of the group.
"Well, it looks like this one's for Yarantar. All right. Get on out of here."
"We were sent here on a mission. We have to accomplish the mission or get as close as possible. Give it our best shot. Reagan, may we enter House Sable?"
"Yes, of course. I've offered you many times to come in."
"I will attempt to walk straight through Reagan."
When you say straight through, what do you mean?
I'm going to walk as if she is not standing there without averting my path.
Okay.
To see if this is a physical being or if it is a projection of some kind of illusion, some kind of magical spell.
Gotcha. Give me a athletics or strength saving throw.
Nah, I'm not going to do that. Just not going to do that. Athletics, that's going to be a 15.
Okay. So, Kitakolo.
I have to pull a block.
You have to pull a block.
Sorry.
Ooh, not a middle pull. Look at that.
I live life dangerously.
I like that. So, Kitakolo, you step towards Reagan, and your body hits her as you bulldoze your way through her, and she falls to the ground.
Why'd you do that?
"I'm sorry, you invited us in. I came in. I must have gotten ahead of myself just a bit. I assumed, as the host, that you would have stepped in with us. You've got to be quicker than that, Reagan."
"You're not nice."
"I am the nicest you'll ever meet."
"I don't believe you."
"No, that's not true. Hold on one moment here. Hold on. And then, all right, let me dig through my pouch, dig through my bag. And I'm going to pull out one silver coin. Silver link. Silver chain.
Link.
What is the currency?
Link.
And I'm going to hand Reagan one silver currency."
She reaches slowly towards you, grabs it, and puts it in her pocket.
I told you I was a nice person. Reagan, thank you for inviting us inside. My name is Kitakolo, and I was told to come to this house with my friends. We are looking for something."
"What do you mean by something?"
"Well, we don't know just yet, but I would venture to say that, Reagan, do you have some kind of special gift, maybe a treasure hiding in this house? And I want to give a wink.
I do, actually. Do you want to see it?
I'll look back to the group. Gentlemen, see, this is all it takes sometimes. It's just talking to people. Yes.
Gelicolo, this sounds very foreboding. The response from little demon child does not sound good.
What's a demon?
I step back behind the elephant again.
You're not nice either.
You're not getting any money from me, little kid.
I don't want any money. I want something else.
You see what I mean? She keeps being very, very dark with foreboding answer.
Well, that's the thing, Losef. What you don't seem to understand is we don't seem to have a choice here.
Now please come in so I can show you my favorite toy.
She steps to the side and welcomes you all in. The four of you step in, and obviously you have to take a couple steps in to let all of you fit into this long hallway that has a couple lit torches to it. As the last one of you steps in and starts to make your way down the hallway, the door behind you suddenly slams. And the four of you turn around, and Reagan is gone. Please give me a wisdom saving throw. And that does mean you pull a tower or a block.
So I got 14.
14?
11.
11?
21.
All right, pull a block, you said?
Pull a block. If you got a 13 or lower, you have to pull a second block.
I'm walking into the main room and getting a lay of the land. Gelicolo is doing this.
Clench will try and open the door back up, kind of just casually.
Athletics check.
The casual door open?
Athletics okay. Check.
Just 11.
11. Okay. The door does not open. It seems as if it is sealed shut, like the door has fused with the wood frame.
No, I still, like I said, Gelicolo walks in. I'll walk into the main room, and I want to look around and get a lay of the land.
So this hallway is a little wide. It's about 10 feet wide, so it's not like just a traditional, like, singular hallway. It looks like it's meant to fit something a little bit larger.
Like a loxodon.
Like a loxodon.
Like a loxodon.
You make your way about 20 feet. The inside of this house is unlike the outside, where the inside looks very nice and well kept. The wood is not rotted. The smell of the air is not stale. The ground is pleasant to walk on. There's no fog. There's no haze. The lights on the torches are burning bright, illuminating every single corner, nook, and cranny in this house. You walk about 20 feet forward in this hallway and see this main area. There looks to be a decent sized cart that could attach to a horse and get pulled. You look around and there's various rooms all around you and stairs that lead upstairs. What would you all like to do?
I want to walk up to the cart and like check its contents. I mean, we're looking for some sort of object. So I'm looking for something glowing.
It'll definitely be at the first place.
Yeah.
Give me an investigation check.
No, I don't want to investigate anything. I just want to look through the box.
That's an investigation check.
You find the item.
Depending on the roll, if it's a 20.
Well,
if it's a 20, you have to let us leave.
That's a 5.
Losef, you start to rip your way through this cart. And as you grabbing onto these wooden boxes and tarps that cover them, the wooden boxes, even though they look pristine, as your hand goes to grab it, the wood gives way almost as if it is paper and your hand tears straight through it. The tarps as well, even though they're woven cotton, as you grab them, tear from the rest of the body. And as this happens, dust shoots up from the cart near your face and takes the form of a skull. Give me a wisdom saving throw.
That is a 11.
Failure. Pull two more blocks as you get scared from this skull-like dust. But it does look like it's a merchant's house. You see, in one of the rooms is like a little shop that looks to be almost like a blacksmith shop. You look, you see like a kitchen, and none of these rooms have doors on them. So you're looking straight into it. So it looks to be like a workshop, an office, a kitchen, a side little like guest bedroom, and as well a bunch of rooms of storage.
I guess I'll go in the office.
All right. The office is the first room right here to it. And is there anything you would like to do in this office?
I guess I'll just do a perception check on the room just to see if I notice anything out of the ordinary.
Go for it. Give me a d20 roll and pull a block. What are you looking at, Mike?
That is a low roll. That is like a...
It's a horse.
Oh.
Five.
5%. Unfortunately, with a perception of 5, nothing really seems to stick out. But there is a single piece of paper on the desk there that you do see that sticks out that you don't need a perception roll to see.
Okay, I guess I'll grab the paper.
All right. As you grab the paper, it reads, and you hear in your head the little girl's voice.
Mary, Mary, quite contrary. How does your garden grow with silver bells and goggle shells? And pretty maids.
Actually, give me another wisdom saving throw.
That is a 17.
You save, so you do not need to pull. But it felt like that nursery rhyme was going to repeat in your head over and over. In a single second, it was going to seem like you were going to hear it over 1,000 times.
Perhaps it is now time to go upstairs.
You all walk upstairs, and once again, the entire area looks as if it is in pristine condition. You look down and you see, as this is a balcony to the main area, you look down and see that cart, and there is a planter that is like hanging around this upper area, providing some fresh air to you all. You see multiple doors and multiple ways to go throughout the house. Where would you like to go? Ignath, you look up and to your left towards a wall, and you see a painting. It looks to be a painting of the Sable family. You see Reagan in her red dress with her long black hair and black slippers, but her face has been scratched out of this painting. You look up, and it looks to be her parents. A fine young woman with long black hair, just as Sable, in a brown gown. And her father, a very tall, slender man in a nice suit with that somewhat featureless face. It looks almost like his face is somewhat muted.
Well, looks like the girl is definitely one of the Sables.
And I guess saying that, I'll start moseying my way towards the other end of the hall to this first room to peek in.
You walk up to this room, and once again, it has no door. You look inside, and it looks to be like a little bit of a play area for Reagan herself. You look, and you see like a little wooden castle, and it looks to have like little wooden dolls carved that are like subjects, and you see like a king and queen. You see various stuffed animals around the room, and you see a single box that has a crank on it.
I will relay this to the rest of the group, and there is no fucking way after seeing that little girl that I'm like, oh, that's where the little girl room is? Sure, no, that is like, that's, nope, and I'll relay that, and I will move down.
Okay.
I'll go on down to the next room.
This looks to be the little girl's, Reagan's, bedroom. Is it the room that you are looking into? There's a small table that has various journals, notes, and papers abound on it, a small bed with purple sheets, and a fireplace in the corner, and the fireplace looks nice, warm, and inviting.
I want to go over to the journals and papers and skim through them to see if I see any kind of information of what happened here.
You see, of all the notes and there looks to be one single paper of importance to you. Sorry, perception check first.
Dang it, man. I thought I could get away with it. 13.
13, okay. So you look and see one single piece of paper of importance. And you read it, and once again, it's another kind of scary nursery rhyme.
Pokers and tongs could not be wrong. Kettles and pans were my hands. My suffering will only end when I ascend. So here comes a candle to light your bed, and my father to bite off your head.
Wisdom saving throw.
That would be 14.
Yeah, you're totally fine. Losef, you turn around after reading that poem and look at the bed, and that bed looks so inviting. Your eyes are so heavy, you can't help but go into that bed and tuck yourself in and fall asleep.
I guess I'll just go to the next room.
The next room, okay.
It's like a family room.
This nobody wants to go into the little girl's toy room.
The next room you see, it looks to be like a family game room. There's a large table. You see various books and like game board pieces and whatnot on this table, and it looks to be somewhere where the family gathered to have some fun. There's various shelves filled with books and papers, and you see little dolls that looks to be like Reagan's dolls that have been misplaced all around this room. There is a singular door in this room that leads off, and you see it leads to a bedroom.
I guess I go to, I don't see anything of importance in that room.
Not unless you give me a perception check.
You see a toilet, and it looks so inviting.
It's a two.
Like, you got the bubble gun.
It's a two? Wait, did you roll a nat one, or is it
no,
two?
It's
just
two.
A two. Okay.
You Alden. Sit down. There's an old copy of Reader's Digest.
Yes.
Jet magazine. Oh
my Before God. You know yeah, it, your legs are tingly. You've been there for 40 minutes.
Hemorrhoids have set in. Alden, you look around the room and nothing seems to be of importance with a two, besides one single piece of paper on the table in the center of the room.
He's not concerned with that. I was going to go into the bedroom.
Alden, you bypass the piece of paper. You walk into this bedroom. This bedroom has a double size bed in it with two pillows. So it looks like a little too small for two people, but two people fit in this with ruby red blankets on it. There's a singular desk like nightstand that is next to the bed with a torch that is almost gone out. That bed looks super inviting and very comfortable, that there's nothing that you can do besides get into it, crawl, tuck yourself in, and fall asleep.
That's stupid.
So as we get to the top of the stairs, Kilikolo can't help but still hear the nursery rhyme in his head. And it is unsettling, to say the least. So Kilikolo is going to have a quick powwow with himself. It doesn't make sense to hype up the rest of the group if you yourself cannot be brave. Be brave, be brave, be brave. And I'm going to cast Bardic Inspiration on myself.
Okay. Do you want to continue on the path, or do you want to go to that door to the left, to the other side?
No, I'm going to continue on the path. But what I want to do is, I see Clinch hesitant to go into the playroom. And as I walk by, I'm going to give him a pat and say, just call for help if you need it. And I'll pass by. And as I get to the next room, I'm going to see Losef asleep in bed. I'm going to go into the room and try and rouse Losef.
Give me the explanation of how you attempt to wake up Losef.
So as I walk in the room, Losef, what are you doing?
No response.
Losef, what are you doing?
I'll go into the room, and I want to see if there's anything magical about this, like, toy set with,
okay,
the castle and everything.
Gotcha. All right. Clench, you as a Luxodon squeeze your way into this little girl's playroom, and you see that wooden castle that is finely carved. It looks like it was like a singular trunk that was like carved into a castle. You bend over and you look down into the castle, and the wooden figurines inside the castle and around it come alive and in horrific visage start to murder one another in a very visceral way. And it is like the wood is tearing itself apart. The wooden figure is like tearing itself apart. And as it tears itself apart, blood is splattering onto you from these wooden creatures. Wisdom saving throw.
That's a six.
Six, yep. That is two pulls.
Kilikolo is going to step forward and grab and shake Losef.
You shake him as furiously as you possibly can, slapping him, pulling his eyes open and blowing into them, attempting to even somehow like close it, cover his mouth and his nose with hopes that if he can't breathe for a little bit, it might shock him awake, and nothing seems to pull him out of his slumber.
This is when I walk in to see him smothering.
Shh, go to sleep. What go to sleep.
It's not Croft. It's not really Croft.
Walk back out into the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Leave Losef to whatever the house has conjured for him. And I'll make my way down to the end of the hallway.
Kilikolo, you turn around and you head towards the last remaining door on the second floor of this house. It opens up with an unnerving creak and hiss, as if the wood itself is giving way and the hinges haven't been oiled for centuries. You look into this room and you see various beds, which doesn't make sense why there's four beds in this room and there's only three people in this house of this family.
It's a bunch of bears coming home soon.
Oh, is one of them too soft?
Yeah, we gotta get out of here.
Oh shit!
You look up, and part of this room in the back wall is so dilapidated that the moonlight comes through and fills the room to illumination of any that is brighter than any other room in this house. You step in, you look to the bed to your left, and it looks so inviting, so comfy.
Like it's just right.
Like it's just right. And you feel yourself being pulled towards this bed. You tuck yourself in and you fall asleep.
Okay, but before I do that, so as I open the door and this unnerving creak, and I can't help but that bothers me a bit. I'm still Orin. I need things to work properly. So I stop. Push the door open and close. All right, this won't do at all. Look through my bag. Ah, what a surprise. I do have a small container of oil. Okay, all right. So I'm going to oil the hinges just a small bit.
All right.
And then I say, well, that's after a long day's work. I feel like I've earned at least a small break for myself. We've been in here for hours, it feels like. And, oh, God, this bed is fantastic. And I'm sure they'll find what we're looking for on their own, and I'll just catch up with them here shortly.
So I wipe the wooden blood from my face. So they're not going to turn that, like, creepy thing. There's no way. But is it, like, a turn, or can I, like, open the box?
the box with the crank on it?
Yeah.
You can attempt to if you want to give me an athletics check to force it open. If you don't want to give me a check, you can just crank it.
I'll just crank it because the thing could be inside of it.
Goes on for what seems like hours as you are so enamored and so concentrated on this box. Time doesn't really seem to be a construct for you anymore, and all of a sudden, in a single moment, you realize that you could have been turning this box for hours, and you would have, and for some reason you did never really realize, but something snapped you out of it as it just kept going, and it missed that little last section. And every single time after like the third or fourth time, when it got to it, you were expecting something to jump up out at you, and nothing ever did.
I feel like I like sobered up, and that's when I was like, oh, wait a minute, this was this fucking box. I'll put it back.
All right. What do you want to do?
I'll walk down the hallway and kind of peer into the other rooms as I'm like, it's silent. We haven't heard anything.
Yeah. You see Losef sound asleep in little Reagan's bed. You continue on and you see Alden, what looks like the master bedroom, is asleep in the master bed.
Oh, Clinch is always the one doing the work. Everyone else is sleeping.
So I guess I did hear that Losef was asleep earlier. It's a good-for-nothing paladin, just always taking naps. So I'll grouchily move my way back to see what has happened to him, Kelly Colo.
Clench, you make your way back down towards where you saw Kelly Colo disappear into that room. As you make your way halfway down that hallway, Reagan appears in front of you in a single instant. She looks straight up at you, makes eye contact with you, and goes,
"You're all gonna die here!"
And as she finishes saying that, she vanishes once again. Wisdom saving throw.
16.
16. Success. So only one pull.
Can I try to punch her as that happens?
Yeah, but as you go to punch, it is like she like kind of shimmers away, and as your punch is going to connect with her, it just like goes straight through her as she vanishes.
Okay. I'll be like, okay, I guess it's time to find Kelly Colo and we can figure out whatever, how we need to get out of this house.
He's in a bed to your left of the door and is just passed out. He's snoring. He is absolutely motionless in his sleep. And he looks just like Clench and just like Alden. You look at one of those beds, the one to your right, and it looks so inviting.
Oh, no.
It looks so comfy that you just can't help yourself but get into a very small bed for your size and tuck yourself in and fall asleep. With you all asleep in House Sable, you wake up. As soon as you fall asleep, you wake up. That's what it feels like to the four of you. You wake up and there is nothing but dirt around you besides right above you. You look around and you notice immediately that you are in an empty grave. Wind howling, foggy haze surrounding up above the 6-foot climb to the surface. You can hear the ravens and the crows cawing in the background, ready for their feast.
Clinch, stand up and then you'll see.
Yeah, I'll stand up.
You stand up and you look around and you can see, because you have your eyes clear that 6-foot distance, you look around and see a dilapidated cemetery that's around you. But cemetery isn't maybe the right word for it. It looks more like a family plot. Where it's only a couple, you know, maybe a dozen or so graves.
So would you say that we're in some plot holes right now?
Cock!
Major plot holes?
I stand up.
And you say I'm cringe.
That wasn't cringe, baby. That was so good.
So, Clench, you stand up. You see that you are in what looks like a small family cemetery, like a family plot, where there's only maybe like about a dozen or so gravestones. But it looks like, you know, it's like those dozens are from multiple generations of the Sable family.
I'll get out of the grave. This isn't a bedroom. I'll kind of just peer around, just side to side to see if I can see Kelly Colo. Being that like I saw Kelly Colo right before I went to sleep, so I'll just kind of peer around to see if I can see him.
Nothing. Kelly Colo, to you. Like I said, you wake up in an empty grave.
All right, this isn't exactly how I saw today going, and I will stand up, and I'm going to make a sound to try and get the boy's attention.
Ooh, 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 ooh!
Call, little call and response.
I perk up. Losef perks up.
Because everyone knows Kelly Colo is known for his call and response bird calls.
That's right. And I have a memory, a Losef memory, of the call and response. Mm-hmm. And so in response, I go, "Kerr! Kerr! Kerr!"
God.
Like the velociraptors from Jurassic Park.
I didn't know what you were trying to
do. I was going to say, thank you for explaining what that sound was, because I had no idea. Car!
Car!
I'm calling my pack.
Oh no, he's part velociraptor too.
Okay, so I hear that, and I say, well, at least I'm not alone. And I would like to jump and try and pull myself out of the grave.
Athletics check.
Oh.
Because you are not a 7 foot tall Luxodon.
Sixteen.
All right. But you are able to climb out of the grave, and you see Clench is already up and outside. Alden.
I guess realizing his predicament, he's not going to try to climb out. Instead, he'll just kind of yell out,
"Hey, is anybody out there? Anyone?
I'm here.
We're all here, it seems."
Okay, I'm in a hole. I'm going to need some help.
I'll go over to go help Alden out.
So up from out of the open area of your grave, you look and you see Clench just reach down with his trunk all the way down to you and like grabs you and pulls you up into the open area.
Thank you, Clench. I don't know how I would have got out of there if it wasn't for you.
I want to climb out.
Athletics check.
23.
Yeah, you easily get out of your open grave. Pull a block, please.
All right. I'll play your game, Owen.
Mike, how many of you pulled?
Six.
So the four of you get out of your open graves. You look up and around yourselves, and you see that you are in the family plot. You look around at all dozen of the gravestones, and none of them have names on them besides just Sable. You look around, there is a gnarled tree that overhangs across most of the cemetery. There is stone walls that have, over time, been worn away with multiple gaps into them. And you look off into the distance, into the east, and you see a little stone structure. It looks like a mausoleum, a old, broken down, dilapidated, not many walls standing, not many structures left mausoleum. So it's only a few minutes walk as you guys get there. As you walk, the murder of crows that was surrounding the cemetery look as if they are flying right behind you, following you guys to this mausoleum as they are hungry. They're almost licking their beaks. at their next meal as they stare at you guys, and you feel as if they think you are their next meal. As you guys get closer and closer to this mausoleum, it sounds as if ringing bells are coming from it, but yet there are no bells on this structure. You get up within 5 feet of it and you look in through some of the broken down walls, and it looks like a mausoleum for a single person, like a family crypt of one of the most important people in House Sable. What do you all want to do?
If my experience with Dark Souls has taught me anything, it's that when you are at some kind of mausoleum and a bell starts ringing, you are about to fight a gargoyle. Sometimes one, sometimes two. But if you can chop off the tail of either one, you will get a special weapon. Be wary, though, because one will breathe fire.
I want to cast Divine Sense.
So once again, Losef, as you open up yourself to the divine world around you and seeing all things that are unnatural to Helios, you feel the sense of all that you felt before. You feel that there is undead constantly around you. You feel as if the entire land around you is desecrated, and you look into this mausoleum and see one singular grave, and that black fog that covered Reagan when you did this, that like miasmic fog that covered her to make it look like you couldn't sense her, is coming from that grave.
Little girl Raven is in here, and she will have the answers for us.
And I walk in.
All right. All four of you walk in?
Yeah.
So you look around, and once again, this place looks like it has literally was built thousands of years ago in the old ages when races still lived for an eternity, almost. And there's just not much left standing. And you look around into the center of this mausoleum, and you see that singular grave that I talked about. There's no headstone that is upright, but you look to the right of it and crumbled to the side as if fallen over. You kind of look and see that it's a gravestone of multiple pieces, and you piece together, and it says, "Here lies Reagan Sable. May her journey to the afterlife be blessed, for her life wasn't." You start to hear rumbling as the earth around you shakes a little bit, and coming out of the grave is little girl Reagan Sable as she floats up above the grave in between you all, and she says,
"I told you all that you would die here."
And you start to hear her say words of a dark incantation. Clench, it is to you first.
Straight up, yeah, I'm just going to punch her, dude.
All right.
That is a 13 to hit.
13 is a miss.
That is a 5. No, a, well, it won't hit anyways. A 6 and a 21.
21 hits. So roll damage before you pull your tower.
So is she's kind of like all like in the middle of us all right
Yeah,
now?
Floating in midair.
Alden is going to cast Repelling Blast. So that is 16.
Hit.
Okay. And then I roll damage. That is 7. Damage plus 10 feet pushback.
Kelikulu is going to position himself in between the party and Reagan. And I'm going to put my arms up to push my party behind me. Reagan, you don't have to do this. You may have had a hard life. Don't make the afterlife even worse. How can we help you move on?
Persuasion check.
That's going to be a 26.
Oh! Kelikulu, after you say that to her, it looks as if the fog and haze that is surrounding the entire area, but specifically just around her, dissipates from her, and divine light starts to shine on from her. as if for a moment whatever evil is happening has subsided for a singular moment. And she looks at you and says,
"My life was torment. The things that I saw and do with my family have not allowed me to move on. You must get rid of my bones."
And then as she finishes that sentence, the haze and fog surrounds her once again, and she goes back into this evil form that you have seen her in this entire time. She floats back to the center of you all, and she screams super loud that each one of you are going to take 7 points of damage. And as you guys take the 7 points, that means you all have to pull from the dice tower.
I want to, like, her grave is right underneath us, right? Yeah. I want to start digging down to her grave.
So you jump in.
Yeah.
So, Losef, you jump in to this grave, and you start to fall. And as you fall, you don't see the bottom. So that 6 feet that is normally a grave, it just keeps going and going and going.
All right, so I'm gone.
Eventually, you hit bottom after about 50 feet of falling. Give me an acrobatics check.
Acrobatics, you said?
Yeah.
13.
13, okay. So you, while falling, grab onto the sides of the grave and kind of slow yourself down a little bit. It's not enough to stave off all the damage, but you do take 8 points of falling damage.
You haven't used the Bardic Inspiration yet, correct? You still have that D6. Yeah. Don't forget about that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying use it now. I'm just saying don't forget that you have it, please.
Losef, so you hit the bottom, and it looks like it is not just a, you know, 6 by 6 by, you know, 3 foot grave that is traditional. It's kind of been hollowed out, this area around you, as it looks like someone has just been scratching at this hard, compacted dirt for years and years and years, and it's just opened up into this area. There is no furniture, there is no anything. It just looks like someone out of sheer boredom has for years been scratching and opening up this area. Right where you land, though, you do see a small girl's bones, as they have all the flesh, all the muscle, all the intestines, the eyes and everything has rotted away, and there is just her skeletal remains. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I want to bring down my warhammer.
Okay.
And hit.
So
forget it. She knows not what she does.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Huh? Well, I'm sorry, I blacked out. What?
Oh gosh.
I don't know all what right. any of that.
I cast exorcism on Dean.
Yeah, we might need to. Okay, so Losef, go ahead and give me a Warhammer attack.
14 to hit?
Yeah, that's a hit. I'm just looking to see if you roll a 20 or a 1.
Okay.
Now give me damage, and because you are smiting, are you burning a first? You're burning a first level spell, which means you add an extra 2d8 of damage.
That is, let's see, 10, 17, 24.
You guys hear like a loud thunderous crack come from below the grave, light explode up of divine energy, and you see Reagan up above near you all, and you see a crack form that goes like down the side of her face, and she shakes in an unnatural vibration. Divine flame surrounds her skeletal remains. It catches flame. Bones are not flammable. For some reason, your sacred flame is actually setting fire to the bone. So it's not just like a a flash of fire. It is literally now burning her bones down to ash. As it shrivels more and more, ash starts to fall. The bones start to crack and break apart from one another as eventually time goes on throughout this 6 seconds and legitimately nothing is left of her skeletal remains. You see her as you see a flash of fire come up from down below. She starts to shake. Her whole body is set aflame, just like her skeletal remains is, but it is not like burning her skin or even her clothing. It's looking like it's burning a layer off her of negative evil energy. As the flames like start at her fingertips and start to go up the rest of her body and at her feet and go up the rest of her body, as it passes, her image changes into that little girl you saw in that split second, a very happy, not so evil looking girl like you have known Reagan to be. And as a flame completely overtakes her, you see her now in a more normal state. She smiles at you.
Thank you.
And as she says that, her body vanishes into a divine white light, and the entire crypt and graveyard and area is now, it doesn't look transformed, but that fog and haze has dissipated away. And you look down to where she was, and right below her, you see a silver ring.
My silver link that I gave her. It's back.
It's back.
On the ground, and I get to get it back.
You see a silver ring, and as Orin, you recognize this ring as the ring you saw on Yarintar's finger when you guys went down into the crypt of the Knights of Yarintar Hold. You all then wake up in the cave by the River of Hevelin.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Hammered in Helios, a podcast a part of the Helios Network. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Feel free to follow us on Instagram or Reddit at Hammered in Helios, or subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/HIH podcast. And we're also posting a lot on TikTok, where I, your evil, cruel, malicious, but lovingly tender Dungeon Master, will post a lot about the world of Helios and even giving like dungeon mastering tips or letting you get a peek behind the veil of what it means to be a DM, or just posting weird, stupid TikTok funny stuff on it. We have to give an absolute shout out to Holly Tripp, who was our guest on tonight's episode that voiced Reagan Sable. As well, as always, special shout out to Marco Ajiro for an absolute banger of a song, 20 Ways to Die. Find him on Instagram at TheMarcoAjiro. Our next episode releases on November 9th, and in that episode, we will be reviewing Puntagave Mezcal. Now, let's get hammered.